we have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportion. We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government or whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves.
That's the only thing we have to fear.
Brothers and sisters, you arrived at the bunker. Grab a cup of joe, a stout tea, or maybe your favorite adult beverage. This is the Prepper's Place for open discussion on whatever the hell we want, brought to you whatever the hell way we want. This is the new format of the OPS Bunker, a prepper survivalist show. So sit down, kick back, post up, relax, and welcome to the bunker. Preppers, survivalists, off-gridders, homesteaders, and the like, welcome to Topps Bunker, a podcast for preppers. Leave a voicemail to get on the show, speakpipe.com/tops, or the live message option on Facebook group Topps Bunker. Email us at shgf@toppsbunker.com. I want to thank you guys for joining us. If you're new to the show, welcome to the bunker. If you enjoy listening to this show, please consider leaving us a 5-star review. Those 5-star reviews and downloads get calculated to help decide the order in which the podcasts appear in the search list. Good or bad, of course, good is better. 5 stars is best. Your feedback is much appreciated. We've got a special show for you tonight. We'll be kicking off a segment that we hope will become a somewhat regular feature on Topps Bunker. Named by its creators, the Collection Room is a place where roundtable-style discussions are being had by a group of American patriots who have their finger on the pulse of the world stage and are willing and excited to share that knowledge with the prepper survivalist community. Do they fearmonger? No. Do they exaggerate or sensationalize the information coming in, like many others out there do? No. Like so many others out there, are they using their knowledge of current events to get you to buy something? No, they're not. So what do they do then? Well, with their military expertise, their professional contacts, and acute insights on how the world's governments operate, they gather information, they research it, they do the math, so to speak. They grind it all up and make the best predictions possible, then they churn it through the roundtable to hopefully decide the best course of action for themselves and their families. And now, we get to be a part of that discussion. How great is that, right? Well, tonight, we'll have their very first broadcast of that roundtable available to the public here at the bunker. It's raw, it's unfiltered, and it's real. But before we get into that, I want to tell y'all about my first day as a beekeeper, as a prepper. Here we go.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Military-industrial complex.
And we as a people will get to the promised land.
We will make America strong again, proud again, safe again. We will make America great again.
Leave a voicemail to get on the show, speakpipe.com/tops, or the live message option on Facebook groups Topps Bunker, or email us at shgf@toppsbunker.com. Okay, yesterday was a big day for us at the homestead. It was the day that we officially became an apiary. Of course, I'm talking about honeybees and beekeeping. Now, y'all know, or may not know, that the homestead is officially called Honeycomb Holler Apiary and Farm. That is our business name as well as our YouTube channel. It is our intention and hope to turn a small profit and make an income of sorts from the honeybee industry and other things farm-related. Well, over the weekend, we set up the bee yard in preparation of yesterday's arrival of the first installment of our live honeybees. As you might imagine, I've been waiting for this day to come for a very long time. I took my beekeeping classes well over a decade ago, and I've been enrolled in, shall we say, YouTube University for almost as long as that. So the day finally comes. I get the call from the post office Monday morning, informing me that my live bees will be at the dock and unloaded by 12 noon. So I am beyond excited and can't wait to get those little buggers into their new permanent homes in my bee yard. Here's the problem, or should I say challenge. The weather had turned for the worse that morning, and the already gray skies were turning quickly dark and ominous and kind of scary looking. Now, I knew that bad weather was coming in. I had checked the weather and all that, but I had hoped it was going to come in the following day later. Well, I finally made my way to the bee yard with my bees. I get everything set up to install the bees into their hive boxes, including setting up all the camera equipment to record the event for the channel, right? I'm setting up the cameras. I'm doing all this. It's cold out. Looks like it's going to rain, but it's not raining yet. And that's when it happened. The skies opened up. The rain came pouring down. And it didn't stop for 5 straight hours. This was this is what I consider a worst case scenario for the bees and for me. I mean, not only was I trying to keep the bees alive, but I had to worry about the camera equipment from getting destroyed in the process. Cameras are very expensive. So are phones and microphones. They don't like rain. They don't like water. Now, I do have a GoPro style action camera that is somewhat waterproof, but very quickly my batteries had ran out on it. I don't know why, it just did. And because I had the live bees, they had to get into their hive boxes. I could not go in and start charging up, you know, batteries. So I had my phone and my regular DSLR camera to work with, and those are both not waterproof. So this was a big problem. So I decided to set up a tarp on the fly, survival style, just like you would, you know, if you're out in the woods and you're about to get poured on, right? So I go back to the shop. I grab the giant tarp. I think it's like a 10 by 20 or a 10 by 18, something like that. And I recorded all this as best I can. I mean, I did, but you know how that is. But I'm out there. It's pouring, raining. It's icy cold, and I'm drenched to the bone. I got the bee sitting inside the truck. I'm going. There's a thicket of trees right where I set up the beehives to the north, and I'm up inside the trees. I'm throwing ropes up into the branches, trying to get them to, you know, get the hook to the branches, and I get them all set up, and I put a couple of ridge lines in there, and finally get the tarp set up. It's an old tarp, so it started to rip. I had to run back to the shop to get me a big, like, 6 or 8 foot pole to hold the middle of the tarp up so it wouldn't sag down with all the water. And then I get to work, you know, working on the bees. It was not easy at all, I gotta admit. I mean, I couldn't feel my fingers. It was just cold. It was raining. The bees were not in a good mood whatsoever. And honestly, I filmed as best I can getting one package of bees into their home, into the hive, with 3 others still yet to do. And I somewhat recorded that, keeping in mind that I have 2 areas where the bees are. So I had to reset up that entire tarp system and cameras and everything twice in a storm while all this was happening. This day for me was not supposed to be like this, okay? It was supposed to be my day, a day that I would remember as my first day of beekeeping, something that I am very passionate about, okay? And I was hoping for, you know, a great cinematic movie quality style video for the new channel. And that's what I was trying to do. I was expecting this. I had foreseen this. It was supposed to be a great day. For weeks, I was imagining a sunny, beautiful day where everything went perfect, as scheduled, and great. But instead, what I got was the exact opposite. Icy cold rain and wind, 6 inches of mud under my boots, my clothes drenched to the point of sopping wet, I was cold, shivering to my core. I couldn't even feel my fingers anymore. it's hard to work with paracord and tools and live bees and wood and things like that when your hands are numb and basically non-responsive, right? And it wasn't like I could stop or wait or take a break. The bees were already on the road for, you know, 4.5 days, I think, with a life expectancy in these packages of 5 days. That's all they get. They get 5 days. Remember, they're young bees, very, very young. They're very, very small. And they're, you know, in these packages, and they're just huddled into a ball around a feeding can with a queen inside of her own cage with a couple of nurser bees or queen help, I forget what they're called, other bees that feed her, because queen bees don't feed themselves. These other bees are in there helping her to survive, you know, the 5 days. And they're already on the road going through the USPS mail service on trucks and this and that and getting handled and getting moved and getting cold and getting hot and all this stuff for 4.5 days. And they can only survive for about 5. That's all you get. So there was no taking breaks, stopping, waiting for the rain to cool, going inside the house, getting a hot drink, going inside the truck and getting warmed up. There was none of that. This all had to happen very, very quickly, or they would die. It's that simple. Cold and wet conditions are exactly what kills honeybees. They don't like it. They perish. That's how it happens. So I worked as fast as I could. I filmed what I could. I did whatever it took to keep them alive. But in the end, I'm not sure if any of them made it. I'm just not. When I left yesterday, after getting them all inside their hives and getting it all set up and locked down, tools back in the truck, it was already getting dark, there were a lot of dead bees everywhere. I had dead bees on my clothes, on the landing boards, on the ground, tiny little helpless bees that I was supposed to be in charge of keeping safe. My job as a beekeeper. And there were a lot of dead bees everywhere. And I'm not trying to bring you guys down about this. Chances are they made it. I don't know. I haven't been back out there yet. You have to give them at least 24 hours with their feeding after you get them into their new home to let them get adjusted. You can't mess with them too much during this stage of their life, or they just die. Bees are a colony type of an animal. They live for the colony. And when things get all off-kiltered, they freak out. They fly away. They stop working. They just die. Bees don't sleep. That's a fun fact. Bees don't sleep. They are awake from the day they're born till the day they die. They are awake. And all they do is work. And the age of the bee determines the job that the bee has. They never stop working. So when things get a little off-kiltered, a little bit, you know, wanky, they freak out and they just die. That's what happens. So I won't know the extent of the damage that the storm caused until I go, you know, out to the bee yard and inspect the hives. And I'm going to be doing that here in just a few minutes. When I get done recording this tonight, I know I'm a day late already, but when I get done recording this tonight, this evening, it'll be the 24-hour period once they were in their hives, and I will go out there and I'll check them, and I'm going to see if there's any activity on the landing boards and if they're buzzing about. I really can't open up the hives to check on them because it's too cold outside, and that will drop the temperature of the hives, and they'll have to work that much harder to get their heat back up. Right now, I need them feeding on the soup that I made for them, which is a one part water, one part sugar type of a syrup. And I've added some protein supplements and honeybee healthy and all kinds of stuff in there. So I'm hoping that the ones who did make it were able to find the food and start working and clustering and getting that queen released from the cage, which they will do. That's what they'll do. They'll eat through the little cork. There's a little sugar sort of cork inside there. And they'll eat that until she is released from her cage. So this is like a timed thing. If they don't release her within 2 days, on the third day, I will cut the cork out and release her. So I won't know until I go out there and inspect it and find out what's going to happen. And that's going to happen here in just a few minutes. And I will definitely let you guys know, you know, how that turned out. Fingers crossed, my bee survived. You know, but I got to tell you, I kind of feel like I got ripped off, cheated in some way by Mother Nature. That's just the way that I feel. You know, the day was supposed to go so differently. It really was. When the sun set last night, just as I was getting back to from the bee yard, I had to put my tools up and all this other stuff. I parked the truck, drenched to the bone, cold. I was not feeling very well at all. I was sort of numb from the experience, and I was very upset over all the dead bees. It was not a good evening at all for me. Fingers crossed, hopefully they're still doing good. I'm going to go find out in a few minutes, and of course, I will let you guys know, and we'll see what happens. So, yeah, that was my first day as a beekeeper. Next up, the collection room.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Military industrial complex.
And we as a people will get to the promised land.
We will make America strong again, proud again, safe again. We will make America great again.
Leave a voicemail to get on the show, speakpipe.com/tops, or the live message option on Facebook groups, Tops Bunker, or email us at shtf@topsbunker.com.
All right, we got a great show for you tonight. Joining us here at the bunker tonight are the guys from the collection room. I want to welcome Dave, Buddy, Jake, and Joe, not in any order. These guys, along with others in their group, spend a lot of their personal time looking into current events from all around the world in an effort to stay ahead of any threats to our way of life. And that's just really the tip of the iceberg to what these guys are up to. Tonight, they're going to talk about the southern border crisis here in the U.S. And maybe some other things. Who knows what's going to go into. So, Buddy, Dave, Joe, Jake, who's going to be the one to kick this off tonight?
Right now in the mainstream media, you're seeing a lot of different media traffic on just what's going on at the southern border. It's a hot button. What we're tracking is, you know, appears to be an invasion coming from the southern border and the northern border, which doesn't get a lot of traction. We'll touch on that tonight. And, you know, it's not just something from 10, 20 years ago. A lot of assumptions, you know, people are coming up from Mexico. We're getting invaded from all over the world. And right now with things going on in Haiti and Cuba, with people, a lot of people out there I've talked to, you know, on the streets or whatever, just in passing, they have no idea what's going on in Cuba right now or Haiti, because they're watching certain, media. And that's where we come into play. We decided to, come up with this, we call the collection room, which we're going and grabbing open source intelligence that we can get out there to make better decisions on our personal prepping for, you know, our families and friends and, you know, anybody in our area. So we take that a step further where we try to stay on top of a lot of issues that are happening. So right now both borders are it's uncontrollable in my humble opinion here.
And, Buddy, I have not heard of anything about Haiti. I don't know anything about that. And I've always wondered why nobody ever talks about the Canadian border. I just always assumed it was hard for illegals and people with bad intentions to actually get into Canada, to get down to us. I just assumed that. But nobody ever talks about the Canadian border. But, you know, back to what you were saying, what's going on with Haiti in that area?
In a nutshell, Haiti's in a quagmire right now. It's what they call WORL. It's a without rule of law. Prisoners were let out of prison. You got gang members and gang warlords basically out running the government and running the country. There's famine. There's a lot of death and destruction. It's crazy down there. You know, it's a quick Google search and you'll get, you know, an eyeful of stuff. Twitter's a good source also. It's actually very crazy. It's so bad that the UN has been asking different countries from Africa to go in and for a peacekeeping force, and they're turning them down. Nobody wants to go in there.
And is it easy for anybody from Haiti to make it to the United States border?
I wouldn't say easy. There's boats being turned back in Florida right now. But as far as easy, people can fly here. There's certain countries, and I'll have to double check myself on if Haiti is one of these countries. But there's certain countries out there that's a no visa. You know, you can come and visit the United States country without a visa. So it's fairly easy to come here. You know, you're seeing that with other countries that, you know, that used to we trusted. It was a trusted country like Venezuela or Chile. And then we're getting these people coming up now that are coming up on vacations that, you know, what do they call that? I heard a term today in the news that they're coming on criminal vacations where they're coming up here and robbing homes, businesses, turn around and fencing that stuff off or sending it back home. And then if heat gets on them, then they pop smoke and go back to where they came from.
Is there anybody working on this problem?
Well, Florida, it's funny, yes, Florida has started a task force to watch their, you know, their border, and they've recently caught Haitians coming across in boats. They've turned away a bunch of boats. Now, they're kind of smart with the boat situations because they can turn them away, and they don't have to bring them in and go through the asylum process. So if they turn them away, then, hey, you just get out of here. They have to go back where they came from. But if they actually come to shore, then you got another problem. So Florida's got a task force rolling down there, kind of like Texas does, where it's a lot of like Florida Fish and Game, Coast Guard, all their law enforcement agencies, where they're monitoring their coast and watching for these boats coming from Cuba and Haiti.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't Texas have their own Air National Guard as well? They got planes, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Texas Air National Guard. You have the Army National Guard down there. They have something called the Texas Guard, which is a non-military unit that's there to support Texas in the case of natural disasters or any kind of, you know, unrest or, you know, it's a call-up situation where they actually get paid. But it's a non-tactical type unit. They do tactical training, but it's more support of the Texas National Guard to do things for them or the Texas DPS in order for them to do things that they, you know, would tie up resources to do.
Dave, you want to expand on that?
Yeah, they can visit our country for 3 months without a visa. So for them to go to a friendly country that they can get across the border and fly out, then they could stop. They could be here for 3 months.
Without a visa. Okay, so does that mean that all you need is a passport or basically just they just need an ID of some sort?
Passports usually get you in. I'm not sure about if I think if a passport's going to be required because you're coming from a different country. But the problem is you can't get a friendly airport in Haiti right now. Even fixed wing aircraft are being targeted. So our people that we're trying to get out of there are being sent to like the Dominican Republic. They're getting them there and then they're flying them from there back to the States. Even on the roads, they're having trouble getting people bused to the Dominican Republic just to get them out of the country.
As far as our border is concerned, has there been anything new? I know that, you know, Biden administration is trying to say that the Republicans are not working with them. Honestly, we all know what's going on there. But has there been anything new that they can say that they've done that can actually help the border?
Actually, they're failing miserably because they're not filing the paperwork correctly. And the deportation cases are being thrown out by the judges.
Yeah, they can actually enforce the laws that are on the books. I mean, that's a starting point. And Dave's right. The DHS and Border Patrol took over some of the role that the Department of Homeland Security, they needed help. So they gave the Border Patrol some powers that they didn't normally have where they can help assign cases for asylum and to help out with that. And they've fallen behind on their work, which is causing a lot of problems with our actual court cases for the asylum. So if a person gets a court date and they actually show up, which, you know, that's another topic. So if they actually show up for asylum, and that's near, way near, in the, you know, in the future from when they come over. They show up and Department of Homeland Security or the, our government hasn't done the work properly, the paperwork, or done, you know, due diligence for that asylum seeker, then all of a sudden the judge just throws it out. Well, they don't get deported. They're in a limbo land, so they can't be deported. They can't get asylum yet because they need a court date for it, according to our law.
Can't get deported. Where are they going? They got to be living someplace. I mean, they got to sleep somewhere, right?
Well, we're taking care of them still. They get hooked up even before they get here. But when they do get here, they get a few trinkets and get taken care of better than what a lot of Americans that are on the streets are taken care of, and our veterans. I mean, you know, let's just call it a spade a spade. It's just not fair.
Yeah, it's horrible. So, I mean, we're talking about deportation. We're talking about court cases and this and that. I want to know, you guys are some of you are ex-military, right? So why can't we just go down to the border with our army, military, whatever we need to do, and just lock the whole thing up? Just lock it up. Nobody comes across. End of discussion. That's it. Why can't we do that?
I don't think the American people can stomach it, actually. And Jake,
that and Dave, would only happen by presidential order.
Yeah, it's got to be a presidential order. And there has been troops brought down there, but the government, as far as the Fed, it just seems like they've never really wanted to close the border or even deal with this for political reasons or who knows why. And it has to be political reasons because that's why they're around. I mean, they don't take care of the people. They take care of themselves. But yeah, I mean, we could turn ourselves into, and I don't think they want to, turn ourselves into an East Germany to where we have walls and sentries on the top of the wall with guns and shooting people, and, you know, and be just like North Korea. But they just, we're the land of the free, you know. I just don't think the American people are ready for it.
Well, sadly, our troops, our National Guard troops on the border right now, they're getting their butts handed to them. They can't even defend themselves.
You're saying that they're putting themselves in danger and they cannot defend themselves?
That's correct. They're unarmed, just like they are in New York City subways. They have a weapon, but there's no ammo.
Yeah, I mean, you have the inherent right to defend yourself as a soldier, and I can't confirm or deny the how they're armed. I mean, I've got some sources and just read between the lines there, you know.
I mean, how can that even possibly be true? I can go outside I can go down to the store with my gun on me. I mean, why can't a military soldier carry a weapon that's got, you know, that's got ammo in it, that's armed?
This is Joe. I kind of just want to chime in on this. I personally have no idea of what they're carrying. What I'm guessing, we have American law and we have international law. Now, these refugees, when they're approaching the border, are covered under international law. So for our troops, even though what we as Americans would deem trespassing, you know, someone comes onto your property, if they're violent towards you, our laws can govern what we can and can't do. The problem is international law, which is kind of like a in between the lines type situation when it comes to border policies. Like if these National Guards open fire on these migrants, it could cause international uproar and it's going to cause a lot of issues with other countries down the line. We as Americans see it as the right to self-defense and all this other stuff, but you know, the U.S. is part of the UN. The U.S. is part of these other international organizations. We still have to abide by international law. Otherwise, ourselves are going to be subject to ramifications and other issues that could come about that, just like how we institute sanctions on other countries, that can happen to us as well if we violate international law. It's a tightrope. We have our laws, but international law dictates most of these things that go on down there. So we can't have those kind of international incidents happening.
Okay, so let me ask you this, Joe. Let's say that you're a landowner on the border and you own 100 acres, 1,000 acres, 5,000 acres. That's your land. You're an American. That's an American land. And I get it. There's probably some sort of easement between your land and the actual border line. But there are Americans who have land right on the border. If those people come across onto their land, are they not trespassing? Or is that landowner not allowed to defend his or her property as an American?
Now, Keith, you are correct on that. If you are a landowner, now, actually, I have not looked this up, so maybe one of the guys that's listening here can do a quick look and chime in after this. There is actually a guy in court in Texas right now for doing that exact scenario you just said. Migrants came onto his property. He shot and killed one of them. He is currently in court in Texas as of today. I think he's getting his court dates like today or in the next couple days. Now, as an American landowner, you are a civilian. So you are governed by civilian laws. So if a migrant comes across the border and you shoot and kill them, you are going to be held under American law. National Guard troops are considered military.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump over you, but that's exactly what would happen to you if somebody came onto your property and you shot them. It doesn't make a difference. You're on the border and you're in the middle of the country. You're going to court. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You're going to have to defend your actions. My point is that I just don't understand why they can't do it, even though it's on the border.
It's because it's military. So it's considered military action. It falls under international jurisdiction. If you were to go down and do it and you had land, you would be held to American law. Our National Guard troops are held under international law because of this whole issue. Like I said, it's a whole intertwining our law, international law, Mexican law. It's FUBAR, essentially. The troops have to be held up to a higher standard. They have to follow international law, so they can't just defend our lands.
I don't want our troops going down there and you know, firing on people. That's not what I'm looking for. What I'm saying is, isn't there a way they can just block it off? And anybody comes across, they detain them and they just ship them back and they send them right back over the border.
Now, yes, there is. This falls under the Biden administration's whole easement of deportation and all that other stuff. Now, if you follow what happened a few days ago, Thursday, I believe, we had about anywhere between 200 and 500 migrants rush National Guard positions. They broke the fence down, got through the constant barrier wire. They rushed past the National Guard and everything. Most of them were detained. Now, I was just looking at this a minute ago. Come to find out, they were detained, but according to the El Paso migrant little space that they have on their website, most of them actually, it seems like, got released into the U.S. I'm trying to find it in my papers here, but yeah, right here. El Paso's migrant dashboard showed 743 people were released from custody into the U.S. on Thursday, the same day that border rush happened.
Where do they think they're going to go?
I don't think they care. They end up under the bridges in your cities. They end up in tent camps. They end up, some of them come up here to like New York. They get into hotels by the government here, all funded by the government. I don't think they care. That's the problem.
Well, and there's a problem with migrants. I'll call them illegal aliens, some IAs, but they're squatting in houses. There's a TikToker out there, and I don't know his name. I really don't care to even follow him, but I was brought to my attention that he's on, and he has like over a million followers or 5 million followers. I don't know what he is, but he's a Venezuelan younger guy. I think he's 15, maybe. I don't know his age. Whatever. He is going on and telling different people how to come to the United States, and we have these laws where they can go to a vacant house and sit there for 30 days and become and it's his house and it's your house now. You don't have to leave. And that if you do this, you're going to come and you're going to get a phone, you're going to get money. You don't have to work. And if you have an anchor baby, then you're set for life. You won't have to do anything. You're just going to sit around and he brags about not working. That's a problem.
New York's very squatter friendly compared to some other states. There's a court case going through now, and that's kind of where I find that TikTok to be sketchy, because it didn't start showing up and going viral until this New York state law with those squatters just went viral on MSM. But you've got to follow landlord laws here in New York. When someone starts squatting, you got to give them 30 days to get out. Even if they're there legally, whew, that's FUBAR. That's really FUBAR.
Well, I just came from the multifamily industry, and I can tell you right now that that is the truth, because we've had squatters and we've had people that were had a lease but had other people living in the places, and then the person with the lease leaves, leaving the other people that aren't on a lease, and you still have to go down to the courthouse and have to give them a 30-day eviction for people who never even paid a dime, who never even signed a contract, who aren't on any lease. They are just squatters, and they have rights to stay there for 30 days. You can basically apartment hop for every 30 days and getting evicted one after another, and there's nothing anybody can do about it.
That's the definition of FUBAR, Keith.
Yep.
It seems like not all of it, but a lot of it starting down in the Darien Gap. That's one of the major routes. And the Darien Gap is located in between Panama and Colombia. It's about 62 miles long, and it's also one of the most dangerous trips that they can take, but they take it. What we're seeing is the United Nations and a bunch of other humanitarian groups are down there providing food, water, medical assistance. They're providing protection to a certain extent, because I think it's upwards to 50% of women that go through the gap are being sexually assaulted. People are being murdered. I think a lot of it, and this is just my opinion, I think a lot of it is political. You know, we left the borders open and no one said anything for roughly 3 years, and we're in an election year, and now all of a sudden it's a problem. So I think it's political.
Both sides are playing this for their political gain. It's almost comical how they're both, you know, setting each other up for this. But you got to remember the National Guard, they got a rules of engagement. So that's all coming up from higher, you know, the political end of their chain of command, and it trickles down to them. So, I mean, if they tell them to go out there and hand out MREs, that's what they're going to do.
We know that from past, from history, we know that Trump can handle the border. He can handle it in many different ways, with force and also with negotiations. And he is running for president. And it worries me, because I'm a Trump supporter, it worries me that the election will get stolen again from Trump in many different ways. It could be done with ballots, and it could be done with getting him you know, put in jail illegally. There's different things that can happen. And if that does happen, we have four more years of Biden, let's say, and that's four more years of hundreds of thousands or even millions of people per year coming across the border. Is that about right? So look what's happened in the past 3 years. I can't even imagine what's going to happen if we don't get a handle on this and we have to wait another 4 or 5 years before something can actually be done.
Arizona, they're actually pushing a bill to do exactly what you said. They're trying to get the legislature passed that a property owner would be able to kill or threaten to kill people who cross their property illegally to and entering the U.S. That gentleman that I think it was Jake that was referring to is an Arizona rancher, George Kelly. He's up for second-degree murder charges because there was a shooting death of an immigrant that crossed illegally, and they found him dead on his property. So at least one state is trying to make it so that we can defend our property and our country as a civilian.
We will make America strong again, proud again, safe again. We will make America great again.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to touch on, because we touched on Haiti, I wanted to touch on Cuba too, because they're kind of going through a revolution right now. So,
how close are Haiti and Cuba as far as geographically concerned?
I mean, they're a whole two separate islands. I mean, they're a pretty good distance apart from each other.
So they're not really affecting each other.
No, this Cuba is a isolated incident. It's due to austerity measures Miguel Canal Diaz decided to do. So, I mean, they are pretty close. They do share a decent, they're about as far apart as like the Keys are from Florida, or the Bahamas are from Florida, my bad. But this is a completely separate incident. Haiti's in a crime related upheaval, and Cuba's in a, you know, fuck the government related upheaval.
The people are uprising. Is that a good thing for them?
For Cuba, I would say, yeah, it's a good thing. Because, I mean, they've been under communist rule for 65 years. So I think a lot of people are starting to realize how that's not the way they want to live no more. But I've kind of lost contact with any information from Cuba since the 21st or the 20th. Seems like the whole island kind of went dark. I got a lot of videos and a lot of things coming from there initially. And then the Cuban government decided to shut everything off.
They've even shut off shortwave radio.
Yeah, the whole island essentially went dark. But it affects us because of their proximity to Florida.
So how do you shut off shortwave radio? How's that possible?
Jammers. They're probably using some type of jammer that can close off the signal set up across the island. Just, I think... things can still get sent in, but they just can't send anything out or vice versa. I forgot how that works.
Actually, they're jamming it both ways from the airport. They have a 40-meter jammer set up, and they're overriding everything, incoming and outgoing.
It got so bad. I got a buddy that was trying to push and listen to information coming out of Cuba one night this week, and he was using a ham network throughout the United States, and they would come in and they'd mess with one and another one would pop up and they would, you know, operate. They had a whole cat and mouse game going on. And he is out of North Carolina. They jammed him out of North Carolina. Somebody did it. Whether they could do it from Cuba or a local somebody jammed him. So they can do it. There's technologies there.
What's going on with the Canadian border that affects Americans and our listeners?
So what we're finding is once these migrants get to Mexico, for just a few $100 more, they can get a one-way ticket to Canada. So Canada, up until very, very recently, they've had pretty relaxed laws on immigration. And some countries, they don't even need a visa to go in. They can go in as a tourist. So in 2023... we had 189,000 people that's been caught that crossed the border from the north. And that's a 600% increase from 2021. Another thing that we're seeing is we're not just seeing Mexicans. We're catching people from up to right now, 66 different countries have crossed the Canadian border into the United States. And out of those people caught, only 49% were Mexican. The rest are from other countries. Last year on both borders alone, there was 564 people caught that was on the terror watch list. Out of those 564, 484 of them were caught on the northern border.
Wow, that's something that we don't hear on the news every day.
No. I think it's somewhere, 86%? I think it was 86% of the people on the watch list came from the northern border. And as of 2024, and we're not even halfway, you know, a third of the way into 2024, it's up 93%, which is pretty incredible. And the vast majority of the border up on the north end, it's open ground. There's no wall, no fences. It's hardly covered at all. It's just open.
Canada is a very, very big country. Correct. But is it easy to get into and to, you know, get around in Canada?
Yes. Yes, it is. And it seems like the vast majority of the migration is coming from around the Montreal, Canada area, coming in around New York, the Northeast United States. And most of the people that they've caught, they're not families. They're single men. So that's something else to be a little concerned about. You have your border checks at your major checkpoints. That's a big border up there, and most of it's countryside. There's nothing up there, and they can just walk across. We have a lot of people coming in from the south, but from what we're seeing, the vast majority of the people on the terror watch list are coming from the north. And a lot of smugglers use the Canadian route instead of coming in through Mexico. And there is drugs. There is some cartel related stuff. The vast majority of the people ain't even Mexican migrants. They're from other countries.
That's pretty interesting. But you were saying something about the Chinese something or another. I didn't.
Yeah, there were a lot of rumors about the Chinese coming through the Canadian border, but that all has been not exactly verified. But going from China to Canada is a lot easier than, you know, the U.S. Americans going to China. China is one of those countries that has a pretty decent pact with Canada because a lot of their workers are going to Canada. Kind of the same thing how Canada has really lax stuff for India.
Yeah, and the Chinese thing could be a podcast on its own. I mean, the Chinese are using multiple routes, student visas to get in here. And then they're using the Canadian border direct flight from China to Canada. They are also coming in from the south and going to Canada or just entering from the south. So they're using multiple avenues.
Let's say as far as the southern border is concerned, is there anything else you guys wanted to add to the show tonight that our listeners might be interested in that they might need to know?
Well, they're bringing across the Z's, and Dave's pretty versed on that. I am too. Well, we've got the same information on it. And then that Texas State House bill that's been like a ping pong ball, that's something we can speak to as well. I don't know if you're tracking that. State House Bill 4, and I'm still kind of fuzzy on it, but from what I gather, it was signed into law in Texas in December 2023. Sometime around March 4th, I think it went into law, and my dates might be a little wrong. So March 4th, I think it was in play, and then they came back and said, okay, it's a law. You can deport. The Fifth Circuit Court said it's a law. And then they came out a few hours later and said, well, wait a minute. They were waiting in the wings to appeal it. So then they went ahead and said, whoa, wait a minute. Civil Liberties Union of Texas and the Texas Civil Rights Project and a bunch of different agencies along with the DOJ went in and said this is unlawful and sued Texas. And they got it. They didn't overturn it, but they got it paused. So basically Texas can come in and start, you know, detaining and arresting for deportation of illegal immigrants. And then they came in hours later or a day later and said, no, wait a minute. We got to put that on pause because it's probably unconstitutional. And so in April, I think April 3rd or 8th or somewhere in April, they're going to take it back to court. And hopefully eventually get to the Supreme Court, and it looks like the Supreme Court is going to probably strike it down and say, Texas, you can't do that. But actually, it's unconstitutional the way I see it.
Actually, buddy, you got that reversed. The Supreme Court said yes, and the Fifth Circuit Court said no.
Okay.
Which one's more powerful?
Actually, the Fifth Circuit Court, usually when they pass a ruling, it stays. They're like the end-all of end-alls. And that hearing for that is on April 3rd, and it will likely go all the way up into 2025. The Fifth Court Circuit decision, it could take months, it could take a year. But right now they're in recess, so they're not bringing anything up about it yet.
Okay, yeah, it was passed in December 2023, and then on March 4th, SB4 was slated to take effect March 4th, but DOJ sued with the other Civil Liberties Union of Texas and Texas Civil Rights Project, and a lot of these immigration agencies sued, and they got the delayed start of it. And then April 3rd is another hearing for it, I guess. Dave, you want to talk about the measles?
We have 41 states that are reporting measles cases, and that is directly related to the immigrant population registering children in schools. At the current rate, the measles will surpass those recorded in 2023. And right now, There's 2,000 illegal alien children enrolled in Chicago public schools, and between 40 and 50 of those are enrolled in single elementary schools, and that puts, you know, our kids at risk, especially in this day and age where, due to COVID, you know, there's a lot of parents saying that they don't want to vaccinate or anything. So it's something to actually consider that it might be an issue, and to make sure that our kids are vaccinated for things that we know are, you know, viable vaccinations that have, you know, from years ago. They're even having measles outbreaks in Venezuela, and we have Venezuelan immigrants all over the country. There's even some here in my state, and they're enrolling children in our local schools here in this school district. So it's something to be paying attention to. And it's not just measles. I mean, we have mumps, rubella, the whole thing, the whole gambit. A lot of these third world countries are not vaccinated for these, and they're bringing those diseases back to our country, and we need to be aware of that.
It's really, really good to know. So what are the, do you guys know anything about measles symptoms wise, or what, is it dangerous?
It can be, but today's day and age, you know, if they catch it quick enough, and measles are kind of like the mumps. You do get skin lesions, and it's pretty obvious that something's wrong. And most parents are going to see that and take their kids right away. And it can be corrected and minimize the effect of it. A lot of kids, you know, like in the 20s and 30s, they had issues with it. But with modern medicine anymore, it's easy to deal with. But still, I mean, we have about eradicated it through immunization. And now it's going to be coming back. Smallpox has even perked its ugly head a couple times, not in anything that we have to be overly concerned about. A lot of these diseases that we eliminated over the years or just about exterminated in our country are going to come back.
And just to touch on that with some raw data, straight from the health organizations, about 200,000 kids a year die from measles worldwide on average. Yeah. So, I mean, it can be dangerous, but it's one of those you just don't want to play, you know, don't be rolling the dice with it, especially if it's your kid.
Right.
Right.
And I guess what your point is that people that are coming across the border, just inherently, they can't be checked for these things. So we don't really know if any of these diseases and illnesses are coming across the border because we have no idea that they have them. We have no way of checking them.
Yeah, there's no way of vetting out their health immunization records, you know, where they've lived. Yes, they're not using passports, you know, where you're required to get vaccinated before you come here.
Right? Yeah, we're the Native Americans, they're the blankets.
Yep.
Just put that analogy out there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Nothing like rubbing the smallpox in, huh?
that's a reference that I don't think a lot of people are going to get.
I have one more thing to touch about, and once we're done with that topic.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, and it goes back to what Jake was saying earlier about the UN. And the UN has a program called RMRP. It's a Regional Refuge and Migrant Response Plan. So it calls for more than 200 nonprofits to dole out $1.6 million in cash, debit cards, food, clothing, and medical treatment, shelters, and even more humanitarian transportation during the 2024 to millions of U.S.-born immigrants in 17 different Latin American nations and Mexico. So it's the UN who we fund a lot of these organizations, these non-governmental organizations, NGOs, and humanitarian agencies and stuff. We're funding these. We fund them all over the world. And they're basically, we're actually footing the bill for a lot of this to happen to us. And that, to me, that's crazy.
To piggyback off of what Buddy was saying, there's dozens of organizations down there. And I only looked into a half a dozen of them, but every single one of those does take federal money, some bigger than others. But the UN, it, it, it's we're a large supporter of the funding that goes on with the UN down there. And they do take private donations as well.
Yeah, agencies like Catholic Charities, you know, something you think is, you know, a lot of conservatives are Catholics. You know, on the migrant issue, they tend to, you know, side with the migrants and provide sanctuary and, you know, they're good Catholics for it, I guess, you know. But they're the organizations down in the Darien Gap and down South America and Mexico and stuff. I mean, you're seeing these guys, military age males, stepping up to the border to gain asylum in white sneakers, you know, white Nike sneakers. I saw a guy, white Nike sneakers, going across the desert, you know, in a white North Face jacket. And I just saw him on a video and I was like, that is odd.
That is odd. Yeah. That's very odd.
And I've seen him pull up to a gap in the fence, like in Arizona. Saw a video one night of a actual sector that I, as a soldier, back in the 90s, we did drug interdiction with JTF-6 down there in the Yuma Desert sector in Arizona. And same sector I was in, I watched a recent video of a guy pulling up to the gate. There was where the fence just ended. I mean, it just ended, and there was I don't know, 8-10 foot gap, and then the mountain started. So the fence ended, the big high wall, and people were running around it, but a van pulled up and people jumped out and ran around the corner. And there was a guy there with a, you know, video camera filming it all. But these guys were dressed, you know, just like they were going to the mall, you know, and where are they getting these clothes? Where are they getting the money for them? Right. They're supposed to be, you know, oppressed and coming to the United States because they
didn't look desperate.
No, they don't look desperate. And that's what gets me, you know. It makes me want to go down there. I shouldn't say this. I want to go down there and start over. You know what I mean? It seems like I could get a better start than what I have now. You know, I mean, not necessarily, but you know what I'm saying? There's people that have that mindset where, you know, I've heard people say it, and that it is what it is.
Anything else you gentlemen would like to say to finish up this episode?
The only thing I have is for the people to, you know, do their own homework. Just don't take the word of one source, you know, do your due diligence.
That's a good point that you make. What can our listeners do to maybe even slightly make a difference in change? Anything out there that you guys can think of?
I'd personally say vote local. The president shouldn't have as much power as he does. Your local legislators are the ones who make the difference. Your congressmen and women, your senators, they're the ones that set these legislation laws. They're the ones that push these through. The president essentially is just a glorified signer. They're the ones you should be going after. Those are the ones you should be voting for. Those are the ones that actually matter in this country.
Good point.
Piggybacking what Jake said, you know, don't just listen and believe the first thing that comes across the airways. Don't believe everything that's on the internet. You know, do your due diligence. If you find something that catches your attention, dig into it a little bit. We found a lot of stuff that we've been able to disprove, like the eclipse fiasco. You know, it's really a non-event. It's just people that is going to be the problem, people sightseeing. But yeah, definitely dig deep into what you want. I have a saying is take A and take B and see your way through it.
Yeah, I think, you know, going with what Joe said, you got to look at what you can affect. You might not affect a lot of things nationally. I mean, you can with your vote. You can vote in your, you know, for your senator, your representative from your area. But where the rubber meets the road is in your local elections. And that's where you can affect most things. You know, get out there and go to city hall meetings, go to, you know, your county election board, you know, don't just sit back and, you know, bitch about what's going on out there. Take control of your destiny and your family, you know, go out and talk to your neighbors, start a network of people, of like-minded people. That way, and talk, you know, talk about issues. You know, we started this whole collection, you know, project that we had, just talking online and started talking with each other, sharing information. And then it's like, wow, we can do something with this. We can better our situation. We can better, you know, always improving your foxhole. So, and I think people, you know, don't just go on Fox News or MSNBC or whatever your echo chamber is. Stay, get out there and challenge yourself to get the other side of the story. Cause somewhere in between the right and the left, you know, in the center somewhere, there's the truth.
My prepper brothers and sisters, I hope that you guys enjoyed this episode with the fellows from the Collection Room. I know it's going to get better from here. These guys are great. They're so dedicated and they're excited and they're enthusiastic about what they're doing. And we're hoping for the best for them. So they're going to help us out a lot. Stay prepped. Stay happy. Thanks for listening and good night.
I always try to take the long way home. Skip familiar places that I know. I always seem to find the open road. I'm looking for it everywhere I go. Hey. This is life in the Badlands, Badlands. Forget about the reason. Don't know what you're doing. I try to catch the feelings. You make me smile. Friends along the way. So pack your bags and let's leave for the day. Take your worries, make them go away. Turn the music up and let's escape. Let's escape. This is life in the Badlands, Badlands. Forget about the reason. Don't know what you're doing. Catch the feelings, you make me smile. I just stay a while. This is life in the Badlands. This is life in the Badlands. So take the leap, help us see. Take some time out of reach. You and me, wild and free. Just believe and follow me. This is life in the Badlands, Badlands. Forget about the reason. Don't know what you're doing. I try to catch the feeling.